What's up, Well That's Good fam? Welcome back to the Well That's Good podcast. Today we have a very special guest. He is not a first time guest on the Well That's Good podcast. He is a regular face for many of y'all. We have Louie Giglio on the podcast, and we're going to be talking about two books that he has out. We have 100 more devotions about God and science, the wonder of creation, and that's for kids. But don't worry, the adults are not left out. There is a new devotional, At the Table with Jesus. Anything Louie puts out, you're definitely going to want to put your hands on. And man, already his children's book that he's written and Describable Honey loves, looking at all the little space things. So we're thankful for who he is, and I'm thankful to have you back on the podcast, Louie. Welcome back.
Thanks, Sadie. It's always like a really like major highlight for me to get on Whoa, That's Good. So thanks for having me back.
Hey, it's an honor and a highlight for us too, because you dropped some Whoa, That's Good moments. So super excited. I was thinking, I was like, hey, what am I going to ask you a piece of advice for? Because we've already heard your best piece of advice. So if you have...
But ask me again.
Okay, so that's what I was wondering. I was like, do you want that question or do you need a new one? If you want it, I'm giving it to you. What is the most recently best piece of advice that you've thought of that you've ever had?
Okay, don't ask me that. I want you to ask me, what's the best piece of advice you've ever heard someone give?
Oh, okay. All right. Reverse. What is the best piece of advice that you have ever heard someone give?
And I stole this from them. And so I told you when you asked me last time that it was something Piper said to me.
Yeah.
Dr. John Piper said that real casually when he was telling me about, you know, anyway. So I was thinking about another piece of advice that I heard someone else give. And I thought that might be the best piece of advice ever.
Wow.
And it was Crowder. And we were on a passion tour doing a Q&A before the night. And you've done a lot of those, you know, few people get in with a special ticket or something.
Yep.
And there were all worship leaders there, I think, or musicians. And Crowder's sitting there, and this kid raises his hand. He goes, what is the best advice that you ever give to an aspiring young artist?
Wow.
Or an aspiring young worship leader? And I'm like, okay, that's probably the question you've been asked 1,000 times, but I can't wait to hear what you're going to say. And Crowder's answer, Sadie, was so great. It was 3 words. Tune your guitar.
Yes. Love this advice.
And, you know, that's Crowder for you. I mean, you're like, what? And all he was trying to say to this young guy was, before you start out doing anything, make sure your guitar's in tune.
Yeah.
Like, and so for me as a speaker or someone who's an author, somebody who wants to be in tech or whatever, it's like the first thing you need to do is tune your guitar.
Yeah.
Like, make sure you've got your thing operating at the maximum level it can operate at.
Yeah.
Don't skip over the detail trying to project yourself way out into the future as I'm going to be Crowder. It's like, well, here's what you need to know about Crowder. Crowder's guitar is always in tune and sounds amazing.
That's great.
So tune your guitar. I think it's great advice. It sounds a little cheeky, you know, to use the British phrase. But I love it. And I think about it all the time. When someone says to me, hey, what's your advice for a young speaker communicator? I just say,
tune your guitar.
They're like, I don't play the guitar. It's like, yeah, I know, it's a metaphor.
I love it. That's so good. And actually, I think it was Bear from Need to Breathe. Do you know him? Of him? Okay, so he was on the podcast, and he gave like 2 pieces of advice, and one of them was tune your guitar. And that has stuck with me. That's so funny. So, whoa, that's good times too. And the funny thing is, because I did rewrite the question for you, and it was the best piece of advice for up-and-coming leaders. And that's so funny that you actually just said that is your advice. And it's such a great metaphor because so many people want to jump the gun. They just want to get out on the stage. And if you don't have your guitar tuned, it's not going to be good. And it's actually funny because we were watching American Idol this past Sunday, and this guy started singing. He actually had really good talent. But as soon as he started doing it, Katy Perry just screamed and was like, tune your guitar. Like, tune it. Like, this is so, I can't even listen to it. And so he went through his whole thing. He never stopped. He wasn't listening to her to stop and do it. So then finally, He stopped, finished the song, and she said, can you do that whole thing again without your guitar? And he was so confused. He was like, but I'm good at the guitar. And he redid it, and then he ended up going to Hollywood because they said, you're so much better, but your guitar was not tuned. We couldn't even hear it. And so what a good piece of advice that I just literally saw played out on American Idol. That's awesome.
Shout out to American Idol, too, because we saw that also Sunday night. And I think they are crushing on the storytelling.
Oh, crushing it.
The talent.
Crushing
the
it.
The judges are locked into their zone like never before.
Yep.
They're appropriately honest, but they don't trash people.
Yep.
And I don't know. I it probably sounds stupid, but I'd tear up like three or four times.
Same.
In every single episode right
don't
now.
Don't we all?
And the one guy came in, and I loved it because he was singing that Tasha Cobb song.
Yes.
And he was just going after the whole, you know, runs that were a mile long and all that stuff. And obviously, we all are like the biggest Tasha Cobb fans of all time. But then they were like, what else can you sing? And he said, whatever, that kind of bluesy song.
Is it Strawberry Wine?
So he just,
I think it was.
I think, Tennessee Whiskey.
Tennessee Whiskey,
wasn't going to say Tennessee Whiskey because it's a Christian podcast, but that line is, and it's Strawberry Wine. But anyway, he just sings it, and it's this whole thing, and they just know, like, they're really good at what
they
do.
They're so good. They're so helpful. Yeah. And, really good, like, judges, but more so, I feel like, leaders. They're actually like trying to make people better, and you hear it just in an instant. That's actually funny.
Yeah, I want to say too, Sadie, if I can,
yeah,
because you know, this whole thing, I'm on the other end of the age demographic than you, and you're an exception to this rule. The rule is that it takes time, you know, and that's the best advice I'd give a young leader is tune your guitar. And normally tuning your guitar means take time, take the opportunities, build your craft, hone your skill. You, of course, you know, sort of busted that mold by just skyrocketing, you know, up into the atmosphere when you were a teenager. But one of the things I appreciate about you and about Katy Perry, who I've met, these guys and you tune your guitars. And you shot into fame. You became an overnight sensation, but you work harder at your craft than just about anybody I know.
Wow.
And so anybody listening to the podcast today, kind of looking at Sadie, who makes all this stuff look super easy, super effortless. When you speak, it just seems like it comes out. And oh, you wrote another book, and oh, you're in another movie, and oh, you did this and that and the other. But you work hard, and that's the non-negotiable advice that every young leader needs.
Man, that's great.
Is learn how to work hard. And if you don't like working hard, might as well pick something else to do, because you're not going to end up being a leader.
Y'all know I love a good story. I love hearing about a story, listening to a story, and there are so many unforgettable stories and characters out there, and Audible is here to help you discover all of them. Audible is the home of storytelling and lets you enjoy all of your audio entertainment in one simple, convenient app. They offer an amazing selection of audiobooks from every genre, like bestsellers, new releases, memoirs, mysteries, business, and more. There's always something new to discover along with your old favorites. If you're a thrill seeker, Audible is the place for you. Their selection of mystery and thriller titles, plus highly anticipated new releases, will keep your heart racing month after month. And Audible's next listen recommendation means that there's always something that you'll love at your fingertips. Audible members get full access to a growing selection of included audiobooks, Audible originals, and even podcasts. You can download or stream them wherever you would like and whenever you would like. Plus, members can pick one title every month from the entire catalog to keep. With thousands of titles, you'll definitely find something you love all in one convenient app so that you can listen anywhere, anytime. So if you're into the whole crime mystery thing, my sister actually just told me about a title called The Last Thing He Told Me by Laura Dave. And I gotta be honest, I'm not really into these kind of things because I get too scared too easily. And she was like, no, it will not scare you. You will love it. You'll be so into it. So I guess that's gonna be my next listen. So new members can try Audible now for free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/woe or text woe, W-H-O-A to 500-500. That's audible, audible.com/woe or just text woe to 500-500 to try Audible for free for 30 days. Go check it out, friends. Man, that's so good. I'm actually so thankful that you said that, because I've had honest conversations with people in my circle around me about that, like needing to work hard. And I think that people have this, you know, perspective of people on Instagram, because you don't see the hard work. You just see the successful moments. You just see the fun moments within the work, but you don't see the like actual like studying and the hard times and the exhausting times and the times that it didn't work out, or you know, you work super hard for something and it doesn't go well. Because honestly, that's just very unnatural to even think about sharing. You know, it's not that I am trying not to share that because I'm embarrassed. I don't even think about sharing that, you know, because I'm going through it, or I'm working through it, or I'm thinking about it, or whatever it is. And I think that young people have this perspective that it's just supposed to be easy. And if it's not easy, then it's not right. But actually, like most things in life that are worth it and that are good and that are successful come from a lot of hard work, a lot of long hours, tears, late nights, you know, all these different things. And so I'm so glad that you said that, because I do think that social media has shaped this perspective that, man, if you love your job, then that means that it's going to be easy. It's going to come effortless. It's just going to be what's natural to you. But even for me, yes, to some degree, this is a natural thing for me to do, to be a communicator in that. But also, man, it takes a lot of work. You're right. If I didn't prepare a message, it just honestly wouldn't be that good, you know? And that's just, it is what it is. You know, Holy Spirit is going to work through me, but I also got to know the word for him to work through, you know? And so I'm so glad that you said that. It's such good advice. Well, let's dive into some of this book that you wrote, because one thing I love about you and the work that you do, especially in these young kids books and so many of your sermons, it's like you combine this, all these crazy things about science, and you make it just shout God out even more. And I think so many times people think that like you have to choose between like God and between science. It's either like you believe in science or you believe in God. But I love how you believe in God with all of your heart, but you also love to explore science. And so one, like where did that love for science come from? Have you always been obsessed with science, or did it come later in your life?
Yeah, I have. I had the vision when I was a kid that I was going to be a doctor. And I've just had this kind of inclination towards science, towards medicine. And then a little bit later in life, when I was a summer college intern in Houston, the summer that I met Shelley, I met this guy that was a drug salesman, a legitimate drug salesman. And he called on the major hospitals in Houston. And because of it, he had all these incredible relationships over time. And he got me into this program, I think I can say this because it was a long time ago, where a few times every summer that I was in Houston for those three summers, I would go to the main hospital there that did heart surgery and sit in the theater above the ceiling with the medical students and watch heart surgeries happen. Wow. I've seen a heart transplant, bypasses, heart surgery on a little bitty kid. Wow. I mean, literally sitting 8 feet above the operating table, looking down. Wow. And something about all of that just inspired me and still does inspire me. But it was really meeting Matt Redman and traveling to England a lot, because for whatever reason, Sadie, on the front page of the paper in London, three times a week is something about astronomy, some galaxy we've discovered, some new nebula, some thing. And it just lit me up, and I got into the Hubble Space Telescope. I started seeing stuff that, you know, the generation before us didn't get to see. I mean, this stuff is new.
Wow.
Hubble's only been in space for 20-something years, and it's 340 miles above the Earth, so there's no atmosphere, so we can see things further, better, more clearly. And I don't know, Sadie, I all of a sudden realized what David said when he wrote Psalm 19, the heavens are telling the glory of God.
Wow.
Their expanse declares the work of his hands. Day after day, they pour forth speech. And there's no place on earth where their language or their voices is not heard. That this is a billboard. God put a billboard in the cosmos to tell us how big he is. And so science came along in the 60s particularly and started really taking aim at faith. And the atheist movement got strong. There was a guy named Carl Sagan who discovered this famous, this pale blue dot photograph. And he was the smartest, coolest culture leader on earth. And he was a flat out atheist.
Wow.
And he would explain all these things about the universe, blow people's minds, and then tell them that it's all meaningless. Mm. And so that's why the divide has happened. All of a sudden, Christians were like, oh my goodness, all the scientists are coming after us. All the scientists are trying to undermine our faith. And then I realized, wait a minute, if God is who we worship and say that he is, if he's the creator of all things, science will never undermine him.
Wow.
So let's cheer on the scientist.
Yeah.
Go do your work, because I believe at the end of the day, you're going to end up at the same place I'm going to end up, which is standing at the feet of Jesus.
Yeah.
And so that's what I want to do in these books, is just help young kids realize there's not a big wall between God and science. Yes, there are differences of opinion. And some of scientists may be trying to undermine faith, and some faith may be afraid of science. But in general, I want to teach kids that God's bigger than all that, and that he created all the scientists. And so they don't have to worry about science. They can love God because he's the ultimate scientist.
That's great. That's so good. I love in the book how you talked about, man, I wrote it down here, about how a male rhino actually eavesdrops on other rhinos to protect their territory, which is like so cool. Like what? Like that, I can see why you love this, because I'm like, that is such a message in that. And you talk about 1 Thessalonians 4:11 and making it a goal to live a quiet life and to lead a quiet life, which is just so cool. Like I said, man, whenever you have the eyes to see that and you're searching for science to find out more about God instead of running from it because you're scared it's going to disprove God, you get to see these amazing things. And that's just an example in your new book, but you also have these huge examples that you preached that have been heard all over the world, like Laminin, I know, was one of the most known messages. You've had several, but Laminin was one of them. I remember watching that in my science class in my freshman year of high school and just being blown away by that. And then now I get to know you, and I've heard a little bit about the prep behind that. And so tell us a little bit about that prep for the message Laminin and what you discovered on the process that just blew your mind.
Yeah, you know, it's such a crazy story. I have to shorten it down a lot, but I was on tour with Chris Tomlin, and we were doing about 60-city tour, and it was two nights before it ended. We're in Tyler, Texas, and there's no green room at this venue we're at. And so as things are getting torn down and we're waiting for him to say goodbye to his family because he lives near there, there's nowhere to be. So I'm just hanging around. The guy walks up to me. We end up having a conversation. He asks me what I'm doing after the tour is over. And I tell him I'm going home to preach at our church, which at the time was North Points before we planted Passion City. And I said, I'm preaching for my pastor. He said, what are you preaching on? I said, the glory of God in the human body. We did the glory of God out of space. We're going to do the glory of God in the human body. He goes, oh, okay, what do you got? And I said, well, I have this about the blood vessels and this about the eyelid and this about this and this about this. And he was like, he's nodding along. He goes, well, what's your big left hook? Like, how are you ending this thing? And he goes, your talks always have a left hook at the end. And I was like, I don't have my left hook yet. And then he says, oh, well, I'm a molecular biologist at the university down the road.
Wow.
I've got your left hook. And I said, A, you should have told me you were a molecular biologist when we started this conversation. And I've been telling you all my stuff about the human body. And B, what is the left hook? He said, do you know anything about protein molecules? And I said, no. And he said, you know anything about base molecules? No. He says, well, there's one called laminin, L-A-M-I-N-I-N. Mm. He writes it down on the back of his card, hands it to me, Sadie, and he says, just go look it up. And that's your left hook. And I was like, okay, whatever. So we leave and we get back on the bus later. We get a Wi-Fi. I get on my computer. I wish I could bring the whole world into this moment. Mm. I type in L-A-M-I-N-I-N and I hit search, and two things come up, just two. And one of them is two photographs of laminin, real photographs. And one of them is the diagram of laminin. And most people have seen this by now, but it's the perfect shape of a cross.
Yeah.
And it's this cell adhesion molecule that holds our skin together, our organs together, our bodies together. It holds us together. Mm. And I was like, I'm not kidding you.
Wow.
I fell off the seat in the bus.
Wow.
Onto one knee on the floor, staring at the thing going, you've got to be kidding me. The thing that holds us together
wow.
is the shape of a cross. It doesn't prove anything. that doesn't prove there's a God. That just proves that God has a sense of humor.
That's right.
And that God has been waiting all this time for us to build a powerful enough microscope to discover laminin and then to see it. And that message, man, it has circled around the world. And I'm not sure, but somebody will do this right now. If you go search laminin on Google, how it tells you at the top how many millions of returns there were in like 2 seconds? There will be lots of returns because now there are pages and pages and pages and pages and pages of laminin earrings and laminin yep. t-shirts and laminin bracelets and laminin this and that and the other. I'm not selling any of those, by the way, but there's a ton of stuff there. And that's kind of the beauty of it all. And, you know, what I would say, Sadie, just to wrap up real fast the thing on science, because I know we don't have a ton of time. These books are for like 7 to 11-year-olds. And there's three of them, Indescribable, How Great Is Our God, and Now the Wonder of Creation. And they're not apologetic. They don't explain all the tricky questions. Laminin is a way of kind of bridging the gap. But what I would encourage every parent to do is that when your kids get to be like 16, 17, 18, start showing them some videos on YouTube about the big questions of life, evolution. Yeah. Because they're going to be told in the first hour that they arrive at university, if they go to college, that the Bible isn't reliable and there is no God and we all got here by accident. Mm-hmm. And if that's the first time they're faced with that, their faith's going to get shaken. But if, as a parent, you can say, hey, these were great for when you were a kid. Laminin was awesome for when you were in ninth grade. But now that you're a high school senior, we want you to watch these 5 videos of the biggest arguments against faith.
Wow.
And now we're going to show you these 5 answers to faith. Because there's so many smart people out there that can help answer these big questions. And then when a kid's sitting in a classroom at some university and the professor goes, da 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 da, the student goes, oh, I've already heard all that.
Yeah.
I already watched all that. In fact, I actually watched your talk on that. But then I also watched these other 3 talks that helped me see that from a biblical point of view. And now I'm prepared to go forward. We don't need to get into a big war, but we don't need to be afraid either.
That's great advice. You know, I feel like a lot of people listening to this podcast are probably in that age range to be the one to watch those things, like 18 to... 25 is probably our biggest age range who's listening. And so not to put you on the spot, if you don't know anything, know anyone off the top of your head, but do you know of any videos or anyone that they could look up off the top of your head to discover some of that? I mean, I'm sure they could type in some of the, you know, like you said, the Big Bang, they could type in some of these theories, but who from the faith-based world could they look up to also get that perspective as well?
Yeah, I wish I before I said, as soon as that sentence came out of my mouth, I went, oh man, I want to say who that is, and I can't think of the name right now, but if you just Google creation science and answers to the faith, you're going to get a good start on the right people.
That's great.
And the Creation Science Institute, I mean, look around for these kinds of people and
that's great.
You'll easily find good resources.
That's great. I was actually going to ask you that anyways, of like, where do you find so many things that you know? And one way I know that you find them is through books that you read. Because I remember the first time Christian and I came to y'all's house to stay with y'all. And this is kind of a funny story. I think I've told this before publicly. Maybe not. Y'all are going to hear it for the first time. But I was upstairs in the room and they sleep not on that level that we were at. And there was all these books up there. And I was like, okay, I'm going to tiptoe out here. Maybe they won't hear me. I'm going to look through all these books because I'm like, I want to learn what he's learning. I want to read what he's reading. I want to tune my guitar, right? And there's just so many things in that, you know, library that you have up there that I'm like, man, there's so much that I want to know. So I see this book, and it was a book that you had mentioned earlier that day about, it was something scientific. And I was like, okay, I'm just going to pull. I'm going to try to read some of this. And so I'm reading some of it, and I'm understanding very little of it. But, you know, I always think about, you know, sometimes I listen to people who go way over my head. I listen to Jordan Peterson a lot. Now, he goes way over my head. But I'm like, for the 10% I get, I feel a lot smarter when I leave, right? So sometimes it's good to push yourself in what you read. So I'm reading this, And then I get to thinking, man, I wonder if there's been something for Louis that, like, he heard this and then he was like, there's a God. And it might have been like the laminin moment or I don't know, the indescribable moment, which I want to talk about in a minute. But what was that? And so I remember the next day, I can't wait to come ask you this question. And I come downstairs and I say, so Louis, like, what is the thing that made you believe like there is a God? And with the smallest pause, you said, the Bible. And I was like, wait, oh, yeah. I was almost like stumped because I thought it was going to be some crazy revelation that you had, some scientific thing that you saw, like the stars that said heaven. I don't know. You know, just you think of these crazy things. And gosh, I had this girl write me this letter and I waited for the right moment to pull this letter out. And I felt like today was the day because I have people write me letters a lot and I don't always respond. But what I try to do is if there's one that I really feel the need to respond to, I'll wait till there's a moment like this in the podcast, or I'll wait till there's a moment in my message and really nail that question. And it's the most simple letter. This is all it says. Dear Sadie Robertson Huff, how do you know God is real? Practical answers only, please. And it reminds me so much of the question that I asked you. And so I wanted to ask you that question again, because I know your answer is the Bible. But just kind of speak to for a second that the Bible really is enough. Because I think so many times, like, the Bible for her might not have been a practical answer, but this is the most practical answer. This is the most evidence. This is all we need. But so many times, like, we want more. And it's almost like we're so familiar with the fact that we have this that it's become not crazy. It's become not this awe and wonder that it should be, because it actually is wild that we have that. So I wanted you to speak to that for a minute, because that's the question I had. That's the question I got asked. And I think you really nailed the answer.
I love that you were sneaking around in my library.
I was trying to be very subtle, and then I told on myself the next day.
I love that. That's what I would have been doing at anybody's house. You know, I'm curious like that, and I don't want to be nosy, and I don't know what the, like, proper line is. Like, I wouldn't have gone in their desk drawers or
something.
But I definitely,
I didn't go that far.
I was, like, at a hero's house or somebody I looked up to or somebody I respect, or if I was even at, you know, Crowder's house for the night, I mean, I'd look around, you know, like, what books is he reading? You know, what's going on? But I want to speak to that real, real fast, and I'll come back to answer the question, because, you know, what a great letter, by the way. That's just getting right to the point.
Yeah.
But I try to read something every year that is not a Christian book.
Hmm.
And not just like some novel or whatever, some leadership, not even leadership. And so I read a book 2 years ago on the building of the Shard. It's a very iconic building in London.
Hmm.
And I love London and I love this building. And I went to the top of it. You can go to the observation deck. And I heard a tiny bit of the story of the guy who envisioned it. And I'm like, I'm going to the books where, you know how they make you walk through the gift shop when you go to the top of these big buildings?
Mm-hmm.
and I always don't like that, but I thought, I am stopping in the gift shop and buying this book. And the guy who built this building, story's phenomenal, changed my life, The Shard. I did a whole message on it. Last year, I read The Agony and the Ecstasy, which is a biography of Michelangelo. Maybe the greatest artist of the Renaissance era, from my stomping grounds in Florence, Italy, and absolutely blew my world up. Because this guy painted the Sistine Chapel, he sculpted the David, he sculpted the Pietà, he was one of the most brilliant human beings who's ever lived on planet Earth. So try to read something that is inspiring about somebody who did something great. Every year, that's what I would encourage people to do. But the moment for me, there was two moments, Sadie, and to answer the question, coming back to the Bible. I hiked down in the Grand Canyon in the middle of the night when I was in college, because we couldn't get a permit to spend the night. So we had to hike down at midnight and hike back out before dawn, practically.
Wow.
And I don't necessarily recommend that. It's a pretty scary thing to do at night. But we ended up laying down on the sandy beach of the Colorado River for about an hour before we had to start our hike back up. We were a mile down in the earth.
Hmm.
So when you're down in a mile crack, there is zero unnatural light. There's not a light bulb, period. So you can't see stars good in Atlanta because there's a lot of light. You can see better maybe out at your house because it's a little darker out there. But when you're a mile down on the earth, you feel like, and I'm not exaggerating, that you can reach up and grab the stars.
Mm. Wow.
And I had a sense of awe come over me that night as a college student that I'd never felt before. And I've only felt it a few times in nature since, seeing the northern lights the first time. And I just was, I literally was having like a moment. That's how you know there's a God.
Wow.
Because there's awe and wonder. Mm. And science can explain things, but science can never speak to meaning. Mm. And people want meaning, and people feel things. And science can't speak to what awe is or why you feel it at certain times. And I would answer this young lady, I'm assuming it's a young lady, maybe it's a young man that wrote the note. I would answer her and say, the fact that you wrote me this letter is proof to me that there is a God.
Hmm.
Because probably 100 miracles happened for her to write you that letter.
Yep.
The fact that she knows you means she has a brain.
Hmm.
The fact that she could see that paper she wrote on, and blind people can write letters too. But what the human eye can do, the human eye is the most complex instrument on earth. The human brain is the most, by a factor of a jillion, complex organism on earth.
Wow.
The fact that she could put lines on a page that when you got them, you knew what she was asking you. All of it is a miracle. And design is the only argument I need. And if I looked at that girl and looked back at her and looked at her, I would go, there's no way that you just appeared. So there must be a designer. The designer is a creator. And what you call him or her or it, okay, you might want to argue with me about that. But you have to acknowledge that there is a creator of it all.
Yeah.
And someone who's powerful enough to set it in motion. And the scripture tells us who that is. And it in of itself is a miracle. The fact that it's 66 books but one story. The fact that it's written over thousands of years but it has one thread.
Mm-hmm.
That it has multiple authors who are all kinds of different people. A doctor, a fisherman, a farmer. And they're all writing from different cultures, different points of views, but it's all one story with one thread, and that one thread is revealing to us the question that we're all asking, is there a God?
Yep.
And this book is breathing. It's not just ink on a page. It's God's breath on a page. And I just got chapter one of John back from the International Space Station. It stayed up there for a couple of months and circled the Earth a lot and traveled millions of miles with an astronaut friend of mine. And he came back from the International Space Station, brought the page out of my Bible, and it's back in my Bible. And when I tell people that page in my Bible went to space, they freak out. And I said, yeah, it's not every day that a page of your Bible goes to space. But the bigger miracle is not that this page of my Bible went to space. It's that this whole Bible came down from heaven.
Wow.
And so, it's a miracle. It's all a miracle. And if this precious girl will take one step back, she'll realize someone made all this.
Mm.
And that's how she'll know. And maybe she won't know exactly what that God's like. That's what the Bible's going to tell her.
Yeah.
What was his purpose? That's what the Bible's going to tell her. How does she fit into that purpose? That's what the scripture's going to tell her.
Yeah. Wow. That's so good, Louis. That I feel like that answer that you just gave is going to expand way more to just that one girl. I can see this being sent to many friends, parents, sisters, brothers, because that is the question that we're all searching for. And I love how she said only practical answers only. But in reality, like, you don't actually want the God that you serve to be so practical that you can understand everything about him. Mm. Or else you would be enough to be your own God. But it's actually amazing that it's so almost unpractical, but it's believable and it's so tangible and it's so real. And even though he's God, he also became man. And even though he was man, he was fully God. And all of that, even trying to be practical, is so unbelievable. And that's what makes him so amazing and you able to just want to drop to your knees and worship him. And so I actually love that. In some degree, that's a practical answer, but in a million others, it's the most miraculous awe and wonder answer that you could have given. And so that's incredible. I love it. I love that you talk about space a lot too. And I love that you literally have moons behind you. I'm actually interviewing Levi later today. So I'm pretty much am going to school. I'm having my science lesson, I'm having my history lesson, all of my things pointing to Jesus. But yeah, you preached an incredible message, indescribable. And I was talking to Demi Tebow about this, and she said the only really American she really knew of was you, because when she was in South Africa, she watched that message in one of her classes. And how cool that her and I both watched a message that you preached in our school days, and now we get to do life with y'all in a sense. But it's just amazing that the things that you're preaching are into schools, even though they're so about God, but they're also about these incredible things. And so when you were writing that message, how did you even get on the trail to discover all of the things that you were discovering about space?
Yeah, well, it's the same way, Sadie. And you know, that whole thing about South Africa, I wish we could do a podcast on it with me and you and Demi some point, because we were working in a little tiny house north of Atlanta before Passion City Church. So we were just doing Passion Conference, and I was speaking places, and we actually, you know, like ordered the DVDs. This is back in the day, and they came from a little place nearby. And then if someone wanted one, we mailed it to them. So that's how you got the DVD. We mailed
that's
it
awesome.
From this little Passion house, and it went out in an envelope. And one day, a guy that worked in our resource came up to my office, and he said, "Hey, this is kind of weird, but we just got an order from South Africa. Do you know anybody in South Africa?" And I'm like, "No. Never been there. I don't know anything about South Africa. I mean, I know where it is on a map." But he said, "Well, we just got an order for 10,000 copies of the Indescribable DVD. Well, we wouldn't send out 10,000 copies of this DVD in a year.
Wow.
And he said, "So obviously we don't have that many. We're going to go have to make them. That means we're going to put a lot of money out. And we don't even know if these people are real. And then we're going to have to get them put on a pallet, and we're going to get them shipped to South Africa to this guy who's a distributor in South Africa." And eventually we did a little homework. We made the investment. We shipped the DVDs. Sadie, I'm not kidding you. Over the next year or 2 years, we would have shipped hundreds of thousands of copies of this one message to this one country, a country that I had never been to. Actually, I might have been there. I had been there one time. And somehow the South African people and the Indescribable message just, it was an explosion. And I remember getting a letter like the one you just held up, and it had a real photograph in it, like in the old days. And the photo was of some people that lived in Bloemfontein. If you're in South Africa, you'll know right what I'm talking about. I want to say it's north of Joburg a little bit, a small town. And these people, Sadie, had put a sheet on the side of their house, a bed sheet, and a projector.
Wow.
And there were, and in the photo, it looked like there were 200 people in lawn chairs sitting in their lawn watching the Indescribable message on the side of somebody's house in Bloemfontein in South Africa. And I'm telling you, this is where, you know, people say, you know, what do you do with all that? Hey, you don't take any credit for stuff like that.
Yep.
You just step back, mouth open, going, "I don't know what you're doing, God, but it's pretty crazy watching it."
Yep.
And that message just went all over. And for me, it was a combination of loving these things, learning about these images, seeing a bunch of Hubble stuff. But then it was the thread, Sadie, because that's what you need. And that's when you're doing one of your talks or you're working on a book, or even in this podcast today, you're always looking for how does this thread to a significant, memorable, transformational point.
Yep.
And so one day it dawned on me as I was looking at stuff farther and farther away, like this is 20 light years away, and this is 100 light years away, and this is 500 light years away, or this star is this big, but the next one's this big, and the next one's this big. And it just clicked for me. I'm going to take people out through the galaxy, but the farthest thing out is going to be a picture of the cross. And I'm just going to set it up, and that's going to be my left hook, because I do like to have a left hook.
Yep.
And it's going to be, can I take you a little further? And they're going to go, oh my goodness, we're going past the Sombrero Galaxy. What in the world? We're going past the Whirlpool Galaxy. What? And I'm sitting at this camp. I'm going to tell you real fast. In Durango, Colorado, student life camp. And in the morning session, Sadie, the kids were sleepy and they weren't into it. So every morning I would show two galaxies or a nebula or a quasar or a comet or something. And then I would make a spiritual application. And kids were getting their phones out, their little sidekicks or whatever they had back then. And they're like taking pictures of the galaxies on the screen. And I'm like, you're kidding me. These kids are like really into this. And so I'm back at the Hampton Inn in Durango, Colorado, just searching NASA, like just looking for stuff. What can I show tomorrow that will be interesting? And I click on this thing. It says the X structure at in the black hole of the Whirlpool Galaxy. And I'm like, okay. I click on it and boom, it's a cross in the middle of the X structure of the black hole. In the Whirlpool Galaxy is a cross.
Oh my God.
And the only way we can see it is because of Hubble. And again, I'm sitting on my double bed at the Hampton Inn and I almost fall off the bed. And I'm like, this is too crazy. I take it the next morning, Sadie, and I show it to these kids. And I mean, they are falling out of their chairs. Again, it doesn't prove that there's a God. It just proves that God has a sense of humor.
Yep.
And then I thought, oh my goodness, if I go from that X structure to the cross, this is going to be powerful.
Yep.
And I tried it at church, same deal, speaking for Andy. And I mean, it knocked people for a loop. Mm. And so we put it into a message. Went again on tour around the country, shared it with people, and night after night after night, people just were speechless. And it's not because I came up with a good talk. I can't take credit for any of that. It's because God designed the world in such a way to posture us in a way to be in awe of Him.
Wow.
And the main reason we have spent $1 trillion looking for other people in the universe, huge money we've spent, looking for extraterrestrial life is because science is convinced that the universe is way too big just to have us live in it. Huge waste of space. If its whole purpose was just for me and you to have a place to live on this little planet called Earth. And I love telling people, I would agree. If the reason for the universe, the cosmos, was to create a place for us to live, it's way too big. But if the reason for the cosmos was different and it was to be a billboard for the greatness of God, is just about the right size.
Wow. Wow. Whoa. That is really, really, really good. I have to say, I think this is probably my favorite podcast ever. I found myself a lot of times when you're talking thinking, I'm lost in this conversation. I have nothing to ask because I'm just taking it all in and just, man, so thankful that we serve a God who is a God of such intention and such detail and has a thread throughout the whole story of life. And that cross seems to be the common thread of everything. And it's just incredible to reflect on and to hear you talk about the things you're excited about and the things that you've learned that make you excited, that led you to this, led you to that. And I can't help but think of the first piece of advice you gave to tune your guitar. And I don't know anyone who tunes their guitar better than you. And I don't even know if you play guitar, but you just genuinely, man, just the research you've done and the things that you've studied, but more importantly than all of that, just your love for God and your desire to know him more and make him known is an honor to be a part of the same generation as you and Shelly, truly. We learn so much from y'all. I know so many people learn so much from y'all. And so thank you for tuning your guitar, and thank you for everything you've shared on this podcast. And so I just want to say truly thank you. And if you're listening to this podcast, man, you've just got started on all the things from Louis that you need to go read, that you need to go listen to, that you need to go watch. But right now, if you are a parent, go get The Wonder of Creation, because it's a great way to get your kids started in this search for science and God. There's so many more. Like he said, this is his third one that he's written for children. Also, I know you have a new devotional, At the Table with Jesus, which has been an incredible message as well. And it's just so cool to see the years and years you've done this, and just more and more wisdom continues to pour out of you. So I know that's a continuation of tuning that guitar and keep going out there. So thank you for setting just the best example for us to live and learn from. And we appreciate every piece of advice that you've given.
Thank you. Love you. And Christian, and man, we were pumped to get to meet Honey.
Yes.
A few weeks ago. So now, like, life is good. And we love you guys. I've said this privately. I've said it in small group settings. Sadie, I've said it to you in front of people. But you are a shining light. And I was thinking about you and Christian's wedding the other day. Mm-hmm. And talking about how, you know, bright stars come along every night, but comets only come along every so often. And you're a force. Hmm. And thank you for using your platform and leveraging your life in such a great way. You're a real, you are a hero to so many people. And when I meet people and I go, oh, I love Sadie Rob Huff, I look up to her so much. And I'm like, you keep looking up to her because she's looking up to Jesus. And that's the way this whole thing works. And you and Christian are making such a big impact on this generation. Shelly, and I could not love you more.
Thank you.
And I'm thrilled to be on with you again today. I love this conversation, and hopefully we'll get to do it again. You're going to get a lot more information from Levi. I guarantee you that. So buckle up.
I'm so excited. I'm so excited. This is a day of learning. Well, thank you, Louis, again. Thanks for making me cry at the end of the podcast, too. We love you so much and appreciate you.
Love you.